Money Show with Bruce Whitfield on 702 for the curious on 92.7 and 106 FM.
The Money Show. What's left of it, brought to, not the show, but the money. The Money Show, brought to you by Absa Corporate and Investment Banking, the bank hosting the post-budget review on the next steps for state-owned companies reform. That's Africanacity. Absa is a registered FSP. Whoa, whoa, whoa. What a day. What a horrible 2 days on stock markets. Wednesday, we actually had a bit of a break, thanks to the budget speech, which everybody welcomed. Well, everybody, I say everybody in financial markets. Trade unions have been very cross and continue to remain cross about the proposals in the budget when it comes to cutting costs. But markets certainly have been very, very welcoming of the budget proposals. We saw that nice little bounce. It was not really a bounce. We didn't see as sharp a decline on Wednesday. It felt like a bounce. As we did on other markets around the world. And then it all just played catch up on us, and with Europe down so sharply, Asia down very, very hard as well, and the US opening 4% down. This is probably the worst week that we've seen since the global financial crisis of 2008-2009. We'll pick up with that with Gary McNamara from Sundown Private Wealth. Also this evening, we need to just talk to the chief executive of EOH. They are in what is called a closed period, so they can't give financial information, but the market is suggesting EOH is not long for this world. It's down to R3.03 a share. This was a one-time market darling. Peaked at R161 as far as we can find in about 2015. And since then, there's just been this absolute collapse. R161.24 in September 2015. And since then, collapsed all the way down to R3 South African a share. Stephen van Coller, chief executive at EOH, will tell us what he can in a few minutes' time. But stock markets around the world suffering that worst week since the global financial crisis, all related to fears of the impact of coronavirus. Investors worried that the virus could impact a global recession. The Bank of England Governor Mark Carney, for example, warning today that the outbreak could lead to a downgrade of the UK's economic growth prospects. And that's a realistic perspective. The first case of coronavirus in sub-Saharan Africa has been confirmed in Nigeria. It's an Italian citizen who works in Nigeria. He flew into Lagos from Milan earlier this week. And what is the only thing that's really clear is that the coronavirus is spreading quite rapidly outside of China. More people in 50 countries now have been infected, and governments are battling to halt the spread. Iran and Italy have become big centers of infection. People traveling from there then spreading that virus further afield. So it is serious. Clem Sunter is the country's leading scenario planner at Mind of a Fox. He's on the line to us from Cape Town this evening. Do you have scenarios for the end of days, Clem Sunter? Because certainly stock markets are behaving like this is the end of days. What's your reading of coronavirus?
Yeah, Bruce, we've had the pandemic flag on our list. I wrote about it in 2015 in a book called Flag Watching, where I said that it's rising in probability, though the actual date when it will go up is always totally uncertain. And it's because we live in a much more interconnected world, much more freedom to travel. And of course, when you have something like this, you have the most incredible economic shock. And we've seen it with supply chains, with events being cancelled, with airlines reporting far less passengers. The economic impact in this integrated world we live in of a possible pandemic is huge.
And that's the point. It's a possible pandemic. 2,200 people have died. Many thousands more have been infected in 50 countries. So we know that it is vigorous. We know that it has got the ability to reproduce itself at a rapid rate. But we've seen SARS. We've seen outbreaks of Ebola. And now it's coronavirus. I mean, this is by no means a guarantee that this is a pandemic. But we behave as if it is long before it is.
Yeah, and that is a quality of our nature as human beings, is, you know, we don't think of something and then we panic. And you're quite right, this isn't the Spanish flu, which occurred 100 years ago, which killed 50 to 100 million people. But it's the fact that there is a very small possibility that it can turn into something big, approaching those figures, that has got everybody around the world totally worried. But one's got to separate the medical side, which is whether the virus does do that, from the economic impact. And we're already seeing huge economic impact in China and elsewhere, in northern Italy as well, where, you know, whole industries are under real stress, from hotels to tourism and others. So there's this incredible multiplier effect, Bruce, that occurs when you have a shock like this. And we're seeing it, obviously, in the markets, which are now in correction territory, down more than 10%.
Robert Shiller, Nobel Prize winning economist, published a book toward the end of last year, and I've got it and I must just sit down and read it. And maybe if I get quarantined to my house, I'll have an opportunity to read it. But the book is called Narrative Economics. And he talks about how in a social media world, in a world where information moves as quickly as it does and where facts often become obscured, often the stories that we tell in social media become, eventually have economic consequences. And he's got a whole range of examples of this. And perhaps the coronavirus is the best current example we've got of this. Panic, panic, panic. Therefore, we do panic. And therefore, there is an economic consequence as a result of our reaction to something that may or may not happen.
Yeah, absolutely. Social media plays such a huge role in everything we do right now. It's another flag where, you know, we have populist economics around the world and obviously populist politicians, all being supported by social media. And it's changing the world as we speak. And then you have a shock like this, and it gets enormously exaggerated in social media. But, you know, that's the whole point of playing scenarios, is to watch the narratives and see whether this develops over the next 2 or 3 weeks into a genuine epidemic. That's all you can do. And essentially, it just means 24 hours a day watching the statistics on this this virus, and you know, watching the medical experts talking about it. I mean, I've just been listening to this American case in California, where the worry is that it wasn't somebody who came in from Italy or anywhere else. So it wasn't person zero, it was somebody else. Now, that has caused a panic in the States, that one person in California has been infected by somebody else who's still unknown. Just one person.
Perhaps, and dare I suggest, this is where social media becomes useful, because social media, it causes gross overreactions to all sorts of things. And if social media is causing a gross overreaction to something that is potentially a pandemic and causes people, therefore, to behave differently, to act differently, to batten down the hatches for a bit, perhaps that is what nips this in the bud. Or was that too much of a wishful thinking?
No, that's absolutely right, Bruce, because there has been a lot of personal changes in behavior, from, you know, washing hands to using, you know, hand cleansers and all kinds of other things which individuals have done. But one mustn't underestimate, you know, what governments have done in Italy and China in terms of quarantining whole communities. I mean, it's been some really big decisions taken, which of course cut right across freedom of movement of people and trade. But those actions by the Chinese government may well have led to the virus topping out in China. So it's a combination of ordinary people reading social media and changing their behavior, but also governments stepping in and making big decisions about quarantining whole cities and communities.
Clem Sunter, thank you for your insights this evening. Scenario planner at Mind of a Fox, Clem Sunter, the cool, calm, reasonable head of Clem Sunter. But time will tell, absolutely. So interesting. So Amazon has been removing fake cures from its platform. It's banned more than 1 million products. 1 million products. So every snake oil salesman and dodgy opportunist and Vicks mixing, Vaseline rubbing, hocus pocus, fake doctor type, claiming to protect against coronavirus. Some of these things even claim to cure it. And Amazon has gone, look, there are a million products on our platform that have got absolutely no way of guaranteeing you any kind of success. And it says it's removed tens of thousands of overpriced health products from unscrupulous sellers as well. It is extraordinary how in a time of crisis the shysters come out and will seize upon opportunities.
The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield. Live. Online. Smartphones. DSTV. And 92.7. And 106 FM.
Well, at its peak, there was a fruit salad of a technology company. If you were more polite, you might call it a smorgasbord technology company. A whole host of companies bolted together by a common brand. That brand, EOH, as best I can calculate, it probably peaked at about 30 billion rand in value on the JSE. Today, it's worth less than half a billion rand. The share price has collapsed. Chief Executive Stephen van Coller is the CEO of EOH. I know that you're trading trading at a closed period right now, and there's limited information you can give us, Stephen van Coller. But I mean, it's an extraordinary collapse, another huge fall in the value of EOH today. The market is suggesting that this company is doomed. Is it?
Bruce. Bruce, you know, this is if you go back to this time a year ago, we had our half year results. We had just found out about the Microsoft whistleblower. We were dealing with it. What I said to the market at that time was it was going to take at least 2 years to clean up. We're only 1 year into it. So if you go back to that, I promised the market we'd sell within the first 12 months a billion rands worth of assets. We've done that. I promised transparency on accounts. We've given a lot of that. We've written off a lot of the balance sheet where we didn't think it had value, and we'll do more of that. We'll give more transparency on the 7th of April about, you know, where we're going and what we're doing. I also said we would clean up through the ENS investigation. We announced just before Christmas that was done, and we're moving forward. So there's a lot that's been done. I think what's most pleasing for me is that we also said in our pre-closing statement is that for the last 6 months we're going to be positive cash flow operationally if you remove all the ones, you know, one-offs that we've had to clean up and, you know, paying for ENS and that. So I think we've made a lot of progress. You know, I'm comfortable. We're not out the woods yet, because the third thing I said is that we'd get a appropriate capital structure for a services industry. And so we're busy having to sell some of our assets, and we're halfway through that process, and we'll see that close out in this calendar year, which will then get us back to hopefully a normalized capital structure. So we made a lot of progress, but we've still got at least, another 12 months to go.
Gladwin Mohomotsi, I'm not sure if you can answer this question, because if you could, you would have done it. Saying, would you consider a rights issue in order to raise some capital? It's becoming more and more pointless, I suppose, as the share price continues to fall, to do so.
Yeah, I think, Bruce, if you want to go and do a rights issue, you need to have an investment case. Up until now, because of the whole Microsoft corruption scandal, we had to get through that, which we have. It's been quite interesting coming back after Christmas, and people are saying last year was last year. We're happy with what you've done. We think you've done all the right things, and we're moving forward with business. But the reality is that we haven't given the market an investment case yet, and this is what we're hoping to do on the 7th of April. Clearly, it's early days, because there is some a capital restructuring we have to do, not dissimilar to what Grant Patterson did at Edgar's. We know only once we've done that and we've shown the market that, can you even go and ask people for to invest back in the company. And so this is the process we had to go through, but it takes time. These things don't happen overnight.
Stephen van Coller, thank you for making time for us this evening. Chief Executive at EOH.
The Money Show. The Markets.
Gary McNamara. Gary. 4.5% down on the JSE today, in line with international markets. Coronavirus fears are sort of becoming a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah, Bruce, good evening. I've got some scars on my forehead this week. It's been a bit bumpy, but it's a difficult one, because I'm not a medical expert, and it's certainly the economic impact is the reaction to the coronavirus in terms of shutting down of various sectors, the supply chains, those type of factors that are having an impact on the ability to source components of various things, the movement of people affecting airlines and that. And I think what the market's pricing in now is the potential knock-on to corporates' earnings and balance sheets. And I think that's the danger. I don't think we're there yet. But there's no doubt, just the coronavirus at the moment, it does appear that the market's overreacting to it. The risk lies in how long this shutdown, for want of a better word, lasts and how quickly the market can get over it. I think the first quarter we're going to have some very poor growth numbers, which I think the market's priced in, but you often get some pent-up demand if it gets opened up again, and you can get quite a strong recovery in the second quarter.
But that is where, you know, risk takers either are carried out on a stretcher and buried in the back garden, or are massively rewarded. And there's no way of telling which way this is going to go.
No, absolutely. But what you can do is go back to some valuations, and, you know, if you stick to quality, I think you'll be okay. If I look at the offshore markets, you know, they've had a very strong run over the last 12 months, and is a little bit of froth that's come out of the markets. But then if you look at the South African market, where we certainly haven't had as strong a rally as the offshore markets, we're also coming off because we're very dependent on the commodities and things like that. But we are at very low levels from a valuation point of view in the South African market. We've got our challenges. The budget was, I think, quite good. But you are priced here for almost Armageddon in the markets. Now, we could have Armageddon, but, you know, when you start pricing for it, you've got a very low risk when you start going into the market, whether it's tomorrow or next week. But I think locally we're at the bottom. Offshore, it's a difficult one.
December 2018, there was a bit of a shock on international markets. I forget what triggered it, but we saw massive drop in valuations of American counters, and that was December 2018. We've had almost 14 months of unbroken gains, and this week we wiped out half of those.
Absolutely. And if you remember in December 2018, it was also Trump stepping in to saying, no, we're not going to be raising interest rates. We're going to be pumping liquidity into the system. The market said interest rates lower for longer. So we're up and away. And I think the same comments are starting to go out. I think the governments globally are standing ready to pump cash into the system. The problem here is I don't think it's cash that's required. It's opening up the movement of goods and people that are required to get our companies to do business, and I don't know how long that's going to take.
Yeah, we simply don't. With as much fear as there is in the world, I mean, somebody who sneezes anywhere near you, you get a little bit of a fright nowadays. The JSE has lost 6,000 points this week. That's more than 10%. What's about 12-13%? This week.
Yeah, we wiped out last year's performance, basically, which was 12%. So we're back to where we were in December 2018, as you said. And this week is exactly where we've wiped it out.
It's so depressing how quickly it happens. What markets give over time, they take away really quickly. And, you know, the U.S. 10-year bond yield also fell very, very sharply this week. The biggest fall since August 2011. The fifth biggest the drop in the bond yield in 20 years. And yields are already at record low levels. You know, it's giving you a very clear signal that the global economy is going towards a recession.
Absolutely. Certainly the first quarter this year, I think it's a given the shutdown. I think the economists are starting to forecast negative growth in China, etc. So, and you do get an element of rush to safe haven, which the American bonds benefit from, but would, you know, if you look at the 30-year bond, which is trading at about 1.6, give them the money for 30 years at 1.6. You know, unless you don't get any inflation for the next 30 years, it's not an exciting investment, but it's a safe place to be in the short term.
Well, and I mean, gold is the place to hide when things are going pear-shaped, and even the gold price capitulated today. And gold shares fell in the mid-teens. I mean, Goldfields was down like 14%.
Yeah, it's a strange one. We also couldn't get to the bottom of that, but I think they've also had quite a strong rally, and they were one of the key catalysts last year for the good 12% performance. But also, I think sometimes people just need some cash. Maybe a couple of people were caught needing to liquidate certain positions, and sometimes it's just a free-for-all when you start getting these mad panics in the market and there's no sanity, and once the dust settles you start seeing where the opportunities are.
And from a country perspective, I mean, anybody who was worried that they were going to be paying any capital gains tax on their investments this year just lost that concern, because the gains have all been wiped out. And it's another blow for SARS, which is going to have to find another way of raising money.
Well, if you sold your shares, if you realised the gain, you're still going to be paying.
Yeah, but there are no gains to be realised.
Well, if you realize the Naspers gains from last year, yeah.
But that was the one thing. Gary McNamara, nice to see you. Thank you very much indeed. Gary McNamara, Sanlam Private Wealth. Before that, Stephen Fonkola, the chief executive of EOH, managing a much smaller company today than he took over. And remember, the also, Stephen Fonkola, and it just occurred to me that he was buying shares in EOH at 15 Rand each. Those shares today at 3 Rand. No wonder he's feeling incredibly bleak ahead of those 7-8.
The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield is proudly brought to you by Absa Corporate and Investment Banking, the bank that has the bravery to imagine and the will to get things done. That's Africanacity.
Bringing some of the best bits in just a little bit this evening of The Money Show from the week that has been. We've had some fabulous interviews. Would like to entice you to listen to those. We've also got on the next Money Show, Ian Mann reviewing our business book of the week. It's called Unlocking the Customer Value Chain. Sounds fascinating. William Mann always makes them fascinating, even if they look a little dry. Also, three stocks in Stock Pick Monday. Owen Nkomo from Nkunzi Investments and results from Bidvest 2, a growth company in South Africa, regardless of the economy. Look forward to seeing their gutsy performance next time on The Money Show.
The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield. Live. Online. Smartphones. DSTV. And 92.7. And 106 FM.
Well, the Finance Minister, Tito Mboweni, delivered one of the most remarkable budgets, at least in a decade. Some parts of the economy see it as a good budget statement. Business sees it as a good budget statement. Labour unions are not happy. They weren't going to be. The Federation of Trade Unions, SAFTU, Congress of South African Trade Unions, COSATU, they've promised to fight government's plans to reduce the public service wage bill. We caught up with the Secretary General, or General Secretary of SAFTU, Zwelinzi Mavavi, and I said whether or not unions were misreading the situation, as they did with SAA in December last year, when they tried to force higher wage increases and SAA got thrown into business rescue. I asked Zwelinzi Mavavi whether or not they'd learned a lesson from that episode.
We should not be where we are. Have we chosen
but
in
we
2007?
Are.
No, but then don't resolve that problem at the back of workers with absolutely nothing to do with where we are. We didn't collapse as
Hold on, Zwelinzi Mavavi. I mean, I know you've apologized before, but you have apologized for being instrumental in the installation of Jacob Zuma. Jacob Zuma, instrumental in the lost decade. You can't say, hold on a second, we had nothing to do with this. That's not honest.
Bruce, the crisis of Eskom can be only traced honestly to the decision of the President Mbeki and Mandela in 1997 when they refused to invest in the infrastructure that was collapsing at that time. They were warned by executives that if you don't invest in the infrastructure, in 10 years you will see the first load shedding. Mbeki and others have apologized for that. The Zuma blame everything onto Zuma is a very nice way of escaping responsibility by the people who know that they should have not taken the country in the route of not investing in such a critical infrastructure.
Bottom line, though, we're heading for a big fight on this one, Zwelinzi. You're not taking this down, lying down.
Not at all. We're not going to do that. This look, it's not just the fact that you want to cut 162 billion from the public service wage bill, but we're absolutely equally angry that is taking away money that was meant for the integrated public transport system.
Lots of issues, and the history is important, but the solution right now is importanter. Don't send an SMS. I know it's not a real word. Retail giant Massmart, it owns Game Macro and for now Dion Wired, lost 1.1 billion rand in the 2019 financial year. The new chief executive, Mitch Slape, has inherited something of a poison pill. He got parachuted into Massmart from Walmart, the parent company. He is planning job cuts. Mitch Slape explaining why it's necessary to get smaller before you can get bigger.
What we've announced is, and as part of the road to recovery for Massmart, you have to make, unfortunately in business, sometimes some difficult decisions. And one of those was the decision to enter into the Section 189 process relative to the 34 loss-making stores, the Dion Wired businesses, as well as some of our stores in Mass Cash. It's not a process that we we relish. It's not something that we have to do. But, you know, in business, especially when you're confronted with stores that are loss-making and are not likely to recover at all, you've got to make the tough call, and that's what we've done so far. We don't anticipate that we're going to have any further store closures going forward. We think we've taken the hit, and we're working through the Section 189 process constructively, as you might expect.
Mitch Slape, the chief executive at Massmart. We also saw the new CEO at CNA. Well, he can't go to the office yet because he's still incoming. Benjamin Trisk. Benjamin used to be the MD of Exclusive Books. He left there and has now re-emerged at CNA, and he's got this massive task of turning CNA around. And he said he's going to make a difference. We got Bidvest Waltons, we got PNA, we've got Exclusive Books, and I wonder whether or not there's ever going to be much of a difference.
It's going to come from the curation, the design, and the look and feel. And I tell you this now, Bruce. Tell me the same thing you've just told me in a year's time. You will say CNA is unique.
Excellent. I'm looking forward to it because, I mean, CNA is South Africa. CNA has been around for so long. We've all grown up with it, and we wanted to succeed. But what's gone into CNA stores in recent years and has just felt like this very sad, empty place. and I think it's the best way of describing it. Sad and empty has been my experience.
It's going to be very different, and it will be different quickly.
Sizes and formats. I mean, Grant had this idea that he would make them small and compact. Do you share that view?
No, not necessarily. I'm sure Grant won't mind me countering him. I'm not convinced about size at all. I think that you have to have small neighborhood stores and small stores in small towns. But I think there is room for some larger footprint stores, maybe not many of them, maybe it's 20 large footprint stores. Remember, we've got 166 stores. So even 20 is what, 11% or 12%, I don't know.
Okay, so I mean, will we go into a CNA in the future and we'll say, doesn't this feel a bit like Exclusive Books?
No, I don't think so, because the CapEx element that made Exclusive Books what it was won't be what it is, won't be in the CNA stores. But what will be there is some very funky product and merchandise design.
Can't wait to see it. Thank you, Benjamin Trisk, the incoming CEO at CNA. Make Money Monday special edition guest this week was the rugby legend John Smith, a legend at 41. He was talking about money, career changes. He was, of course, the Springbok captain in 1997 when we previously won the World Cup. He's now the CEO of a business called SSG Holdings. I asked him if he'd ever had charlatans, because sports people are often vulnerable to all kinds of crooks. I said, have they tried to use your name inappropriately?
Yeah, look, and without doubt, I was approached with many of these get-rich schemes and guys with massively amazing ideas, and they're all very good salesmen. And you know, it's quite easy to be caught into that. I mean, most guys in our generation, if you hadn't owned a coffee shop at some stage and lost a few hundred grand, you just hadn't lived.
Did you go down that route?
I did, Sandy, but thankfully, I went with one or two other guys, so my taxes weren't as significant. But, you know, it's sort of the one way you got to learn. You just got to hope that that happens to you at an early time or that, you know, that you sort of get better advice. I was fortunate. Probably made less of those bad decisions. You know, I was fortunate in the fact that I found my wife at a very young age, and so we were dating from a trick and got married at 27 years old. But she's a CA, so as you can well imagine, CAs find it extremely hard to spend money, which made her the perfect wife. But she also gave me some sound advice all the time, and I would always bounce things off of her and make sure that if she got a sort of a bad feeling, we would then sort of reverse. But I guess I was lucky in that matter. But there are not many other guys who have would have had that kind of advice on hand all the time.
John Smith, what a lovely guy. We had lovely guests on The Money Show this week. If you missed any of the shows and you want to recap, you can find our podcast with your favorite podcast provider. Coming up in a moment, we're going to play the Brutal Biz Quiz, as we do on a Friday. You know what to do. Charlene knows what to do. Everybody knows what to do. 0214460567 011-883-0702. Those are the numbers to call. Brutal Biz Quiz time. First question tonight. Which city's been in lockdown since January because of coronavirus? The name of the city that's been in lockdown since January because of coronavirus. 011-883-0702-021-446-0567.
The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield is proudly brought to you by Absa Corporate and Investment Banking, the bank that has the bravery to imagine and the will to get things done. That's Africanacity. The Money Show. The Brutal Biz Quiz.
Let's crown the whiz of the biz quiz this Friday night. I would like to know, please, Nushin, which city's been in lockdown since January?
It's Wuhan.
Wuhan, absolutely right. The first confirmed death on the 9th of January 2020. I reported yesterday that South Africa will evacuate more than 100 South Africans from Wuhan, the epicenter of the coronavirus outbreak in China. Which South African rugby captain is now the CEO of a security company?
It's John Smith.
John Smith is absolutely right. Marvelous rugby player and a great Make Money Mondays guest. This is such a good question. This is a good question. I don't know that there's a clue in it. But if I'd left the clue out, I wouldn't have got the question. Which 8-store Western Cape grocer was bought by Pep Stores in 1979 from the Rogut family?
Bought by Pep Stores.
Yeah, so the Rogut family started a Western Cape grocery chain. They had 8 stores, and Pep Stores bought it in 1979.
That would be ShopRite.
Was that a process of elimination or lucky guess?
Lucky guess.
No, and well done, because Pep Stores is the basis of Christo Wiese's wealth, and they, of course, used that in 1979 to buy from the Rogut family ShopRite. And ShopRite is huge and is taking on Woolies through the Checkers brand. ShopRite is growing. YouSave is huge, and they're expanding despite the negative economy. This one's going to get you, Nusha. This one is going to get you. In which suburb was the very first Spur Steak Ranch?
Spur Suburb? That would be in Cape Town.
Yes.
I'm going to go with Rondebosch.
You're just down the road.
No, it can't be Rondebosch. No, it's not.
Are you Googling fast?
No, I'm not.
So what's your final answer?
My final answer would be
Claremont. I'm afraid not. Aww. You can't have three goes. It's the Brutal Biz Quiz, not the three goes because Bruce is nice Biz Quiz. Lucia, you're so good. You're so good. I'm impressed. But you're not the Wizard of the Biz Quiz. Robert.
It's Newlands, Cape Town.
Newlands, Cape Town. Absolutely right. 1967, Alan Ambor opened the Golden Spur in Newlands. In which company recently sold CNA to Astoria Investments?
It was sold by Econ.
Very good. And which plant did the finance minister use during his budget speech? He didn't pick it from his own garden. Thank goodness.
Sorry, I didn't hear the question.
Which plant did the finance minister take with him? Pardon? The aloe plant. Aloe ferox, to be more precise.
Aloe, yeah.
But Robert, that is enough to make you the whiz of the Brutal Biz Quiz this Friday. Well done to you, Robert, and well done, Nushe. You were so good, but we can't give you three goes to answer the question. I mean, that would be unreasonable. People get a bad name. People think I'm nice. We can't have that.